Today on the 21st show,
Habemus Papam.
We have a Pope, and he is from Illinois.
Dominum Robertum Franciscum, Sancte Romanae Ecclesiae, Cardinalem Prevost.
The former Cardinal Robert Francis Prevost is now Pope Leo XIV. Born in Chicago and raised in South Suburban Dalton, the Pope spent much of his adult life in Peru. We'll talk about what his selection means for the world's 1.4 billion Catholics and the more than 3 million Catholics here in Illinois. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Pope Leo XIV was announced to the world yesterday. Catholics rejoiced, but Illinoisans lost their minds. That's because Pope Leo is Robert Francis Prevost from the south suburbs of Chicago.
Habemus Papam.
And that is Latin for we have a Pope. And he's a Chicago native.
There is a lot of pride on this block here in suburban New Lenox because this is where the Pope's older brother lives. He is John Prevost, a retired Catholic school principal.
You hear the name and you do say, think, feel what?
Shock, disbelief, a whole lot of pride, a whole lot of is this for real? Now what are we going to do?
Cubs or Sox?
See, they had it wrong. He's Sox. And then the radio announced Cubs, and that's not true.
You heard it here. It's White Sox.
All right, there you have it. White Sox, St. Mary of the Assumption Parish, Dalton, Illinois, Aurelio's Pizza. 1.4 billion Catholics around the world, about 3.5 million here in Illinois, according to the Catholic Conference of Illinois. And people are digging up every connection they have to the new Pope. What does it mean that he is from here? What does it mean to have an American Pope? What does it mean to have an Augustinian Pope? We heard from a lot of you in our texting group about this. Pete in Carbondale said, I love the idea of growing up in the same area as the new pontiff. It's an amazing connection, even as an admittedly lapsed Catholic. I hope the first American pope sends a message that in spite of turmoil around us, the rights of all are still important to the church, that we are servants to those who need. That is our only true calling. I am cautiously optimistic. Thank you for that, Pete. So, under the circumstances, we are deviating from our usual Friday Week in Review format and talking about this for the entire program today. If you want to join us, the number is 800-222-9455. How do you feel about there being a Pope from Illinois? How would you describe your connection to Catholicism and the Church today, especially if you are Catholic or were raised Catholic, but maybe have fallen away, as so many have? What do you hope to see from Pope Leo XIV's leadership? The number again, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Joining us to talk about this is Father Paul Galletto. He's pastor at St. Paul Parish in South Philadelphia and an administrator at St. Augustine Church, but he also lived with Pope Leo in Rome and studied with him at Villanova University. Father Paul, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
My pleasure.
Also with us is Michael Murphy, director of the Hank Center for the Catholic Intellectual Heritage at Loyola University, Chicago. He's also a senior lecturer there. He has a PhD in theology, literature, and philosophy from the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. Dr. Murphy, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thanks for the invitation.
Father Paul, I'm going to start with you. What was your first reaction to the news yesterday?
OMG. I taught Latin, so I understood the Latin. And as soon as the proto-deacon said, Robertum, I said, oh, my God, it's Bob. It's Bob's going to be Pope. And I've known Bob, a.k.a. Leo, or Leo, a.k.a. Bob, since about 1976, and have been with him at different points along the journey of life. And he's just a great guy and has the perfect temperament for being a leader. He listens, and that's just a great gift.
Yeah, every Catholic in Illinois, especially those from Chicago and the South Suburbs, is having this experience where we feel like we have some special insight into the new Pope. So you actually knew him. How did you come to meet him? What was that like?
So I did my novitiate, which is a year of prayer and discernment in St. Louis, Missouri. And at that time, Bob, sorry about that background noise. At that time, Bob was a student at Villanova University, and we sort of swapped places, but we got together and met during that year. And so that would be the first time that I met him. And then we just kept in touch throughout, and eventually we studied together in Rome. I had been in Rome 2 years already when he arrived, and I sort of gave him his introduction to the city. And now to think that he's the Bishop of Rome is another OMG moment. I was in Rome when he was elevated to Cardinal 18 months ago, and we laughed and told stories about our time together. So it was a great time.
Must have been surreal enough back then, but to
yes,
think now,
right.
Yeah. And we obviously we forgive the phones today. I'm sure everyone we're talking to has their phones ringing off the hook about this sort of thing. So, Dr. Michael Murphy, let me bring you into the conversation now. What was your reaction yesterday?
Hi, it was great to hear Father Paul's an OMG from an OSA. That's priceless. but you know, similar. You know, I got to meet by providence or happenstance, however you want to cut it up. I got to meet Cardinal Prevost last August. We had dinner together in Wheaton as he was home visiting his family in New Lenox. And so, and we at Loyola have been working on a project with the Pontifical Commission for Latin America, this really great Building Bridges program, which we can talk about if you want later, but it's, you know, multi-year project that Pope Francis loved, on Zoom with students from around the world. Pretty amazing thing. And so we were talking about ways to kind of scale it up and continue it at a restaurant. And so, and we'd emailed a couple of times. And we're supposed to maybe connect in June this in Italy, in Rome, when I was visiting for the Jubilee year. I don't know what's gonna happen now. But when I heard, like Father Paul said, I was, cause you know, everybody's been handicapping papal elections since the 16th century, right? Everybody's got their, all these kind of professional Catholics have their wonky hat on and they're handicapping with the odds. And everybody knows the competence and the kind of gentle humility, joy, but really able administrative powers of Cardinal Prevost, now Pope Leo XIV. Everybody knew that, but we also knew that, you know, it's not conventional wisdom to stack the superpower of the U.S. with another global power. And the fact that he was elevated says a few things, but when I fell out of my chair basically when I heard the Latin and Robertum and then Prevost, and it's just amazing. I'm amazed still.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because I was listening to the America Magazine podcast. For people who aren't familiar, this is a Jesuit magazine yesterday. And they were saying that their sources in the Vatican said that people there don't even really think of Prevost as an American. They called him the least American of the American cardinals. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's great. You know, on paper, he's a citizen. He has triple citizenship. He's a citizen of the U.S., you know, from Dalton and his background in the South Suburbs, South City. He's a citizen of Peru, lived many years there, three different occasions. His service and ministry there is very dear to him. And now he's a citizen, you know, is the head of the sovereign state of the Vatican. And so he is that. He inhabits this bridge builder, this Pontifex Maximus title the Pope has. And he is a global citizen who's kind of that by nature, by fact, and by disposition.
And I mean, just, you know, to that point, he's a polyglot. His opening remarks, I forget the formal term for that, but it was multilingual, not in English, though, interestingly. I don't know if you can speak to that as well.
Yeah, you know, I think he has five languages. He probably reads three others. But I, you know, I tracked his Latin. You know, I'm not the best. I don't know how Father Paul is, but like I, you know, I could kind of understand it, church Latin. And then he went to Italian, and then he went to Spanish, and then he went to English. And this morning, this was noteworthy. His first homily was in English. And that I don't think has ever happened before. And I'm still trying to digest what that might mean.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. So, I mean, speak to that, because there are, you know, obviously America, there are a lot of Catholics in America. There are a lot in Illinois, but they've never had a pope who spoke perfect English, if you will.
Right. And I guess the other largest religious group is the group of ex-Catholics. We hasten to add that. And we're in a climate of disaffiliation, which is interesting. But yeah, to have the is it the lingua franca, you know, English? I mean, most people speak it. That could be practical. How's the Latin? Is the language of the church? How are people's Italian? So, you know, I'm still digesting, but he chose that. I don't think there's a political or strategic reason, but it was an intentional reason. And it's just new. I'm still digesting it.
Father Paul had to step away for a moment, so let me take a moment to just reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us today, we are talking about Pope Leo XIV, formerly, or also still, I guess, Robert Prevost, originally from Dalton, Illinois, in the south suburbs of Chicago. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today on the program. That's 800-222-9455. You know what? Let's actually listen to a little more of the comments we got about this. We had a voicemail from Joe. Let's take a listen to that.
Hello, this is Joe from Champaign. I'm calling because I'm a fallen Catholic. I mean, I attended Catholic school for K-12 in Lagos, Nigeria, and I am glad that the Pope, the new Pope, Leo the 14th, is taking the name Leo, because Leo the 13th really started the Vatican II. So I hope he is enthusiastic about reform and bringing people into the Catholic Church. I mean, I am not someone of faith any longer. I mean, I don't necessarily believe in what Catholicism does, but I believe in doing good for humanity, and I hope Leo the 14th does good for humanity as Papa Franco did. I am glad that he's from Dalton. I used to work in Harvey, Illinois, which is right next to Harvey, and I am glad.
All right. Thank you so much for that message, Joe. We really appreciate it. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Dr. Michael Murphy is with us. He's director of the Hank Center for the Catholic Intellectual Heritage and senior lecturer in the Department of Theology at Loyola University in Chicago. So, Dr. Murphy, talk more about why not an American pope. You mentioned this idea of too much power concentrated in America. Why did people think this was not something anyone would see in their lifetimes?
Yeah, can I comment on the callers?
Oh, absolutely, sure.
Yeah, I should say, and then go back to that one. I love the fact that he brought up the fact that if you're a cardinal, you get elevated, then you got to choose your name, and the name, you know, the name sends some cues to the rest of us of the style. And so Leo the 13th is a great reformer. Didn't start Vatican II, came after Vatican I. He served in the papal chair from, I think, 1878 to 1902. And he's a major reformer. He's well established to be associated with the church's kind of waking up to the social problems and its social mission. So the long social mission about, you know, care for creation, the dignity of work, the dignity of all persons, you know, the right to migrate, all kinds of things like that. Leo the 13th was, you know, wrote this Rerum Novarum on the rights of workers. You know, he might be one of the architects of the 5-day work week and labor unions. And so, but he was also very much a bridge builder and a clear person, because he showed how the church was very wary of socialism on the one hand and very wary of capitalism on the other, to be that integrated Catholic view that understands the balance of human polity, economics, and social life. So the other Leo he might have also liked was Leo the Great from the 5th century, who was this other peacemaking bridge builder who, legend goes, left Rome and met Attila the Hun outside of Rome and persuaded Attila the Hun to make a U-turn and not attack and sack the city of Rome. So I think it was great for the caller to kind of mention Leo the lion, you know. And I think that that Pope Francis the 14th has a bit of a lion's heart in a very calm and quiet way, and he's going to need it, I think, to go to your other point about politics.
Yeah, no, you said you said Pope Francis, but you mean Pope Leo, right? We still have Pope that Leo, in our minds. Yeah.
Yeah. God rest Pope Francis.
Yeah, and absolutely. All right, let me pause here again. We're going to take another break, or I should say a break on the show, and we will come back. If you want to join us today, the number is 800-222-9455. I'm going to share another comment we got from Aaron in Springfield in our texting group. Sent us the message today. What an amazing time to be in Illinois. America asked for help from God with the new federal regime, and God answered Illinois' prayers. This gives me a lot of hope that America might be able to have a unifying presence like Pope John Paul did to unify East and West Germany and build solidarity for the underserved in Eastern Europe under communism. Thank you for that message, Aaron. If you want to join us again, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. We are talking about Pope Leo the 14th. Formerly Robert Prevost from Dalton, Illinois, in the south suburbs of Chicago. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking for the entire hour today about the election of Pope Leo the 14th to lead the world's 1.4 billion Catholics, including more than 3.5 million here in Illinois. He was born in Chicago, raised in South Suburban Dalton, right here in the 21st state. Let's listen to a clip of him. This is actually from last year. It was at a meeting of bishops in Rome, and here he is talking about how he sees the role of church leadership.
One of the things that I certainly have learned more about in the process of the synod is wide varieties of understanding the ministry of the bishop, sometimes determined by cultural factors, sometimes determined, of course, by personal issues, personality, the character of the bishop. But above all and around or underneath all of that has to be a foundation of who a bishop is called to be. And as Pope Francis has reminded us many times, a bishop is called to serve. His authority is service. And so to look for different ways in which a bishop can serve in any given society, in any given church, I think is very important. The bishop is not supposed to be a little prince sitting in his kingdom, but rather called authentically to be humble, to be close to the people he serves, to walk with them, to suffer with them, and to look for ways that he can better live the gospel message in the midst of his people.
Live the message in the midst of his people, suffer with his people. My guests today are Father Paul Galletto, who studied with the Pope at Villanova University, Professor Michael Murphy at Loyola University Chicago, who actually had lunch with the future Pope last year, as he was describing earlier. I want to introduce a few more voices into our conversation now. Sister Kathleen Mulcahy is with the Dominican Sisters of Springfield. She's based in Chicago, though, where she serves as executive director of Bethany House House of Hospitality. It offers housing and support services to young immigrant women. The plight of migrants was a central concern for the late Pope Francis. We'll talk about whether Pope Leo is expected to continue that focus. Sister Kathleen, thanks so much for being here today on the 21st Show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I also want to introduce Father Stan Chu Ilo, who is Associate Professor in Catholic Studies at DePaul University in Chicago. He has a PhD in theology from the University of St. Michael's College at the University of Toronto, another PhD from the University of South Africa in the Sociology of Education. He's ordained Catholic priest in his home country of Nigeria. Father Ilo, thank you for making time to be with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
Sister Mulcahy, I want to begin with you, Sister Kathleen. I should say, you work with migrants. We heard a lot in the past few weeks from advocates who said how important it was that Pope Francis made that a repeated point of concern for his public comments. Talk about how that was from your perspective.
Yes, we are very grateful to Pope Francis for bringing the cause of migrants to the forefront, to make it a visible cause in the church. And I have great hope that Pope Leo will do the same thing. He is a person with a heart for the poor and for migrants, comes from a family, I understand his grandmother was a migrant from Haiti to New Orleans. So he knows the migrant experience firsthand.
Father Ilo, I want to ask you, I know you just joined us, but we talked a little earlier on the program about how unusual it was to have an American pope, but also how Pope Leo is not he's not only American, I should say. He's really more of a person of the entire world, and the Global South in particular. Can you talk about your understanding of the significance of that in his election by his fellow cardinals?
Yes, I think it's a statement of intent by the cardinals that the spirit of the Second Vatican Council is at work here. The Second Vatican Council was the statement boldly made by the church under the leadership of John the 23rd that the church will now be open to the world. And we are living at a time that many scholars say we are living in a post-Western Christianity. That is, as Christianity is shifting from the Western mainland, especially Europe, to the Global South, then we might, and indeed ought to, look for new solutions to new emerging problems. So we cannot meet today's problems with yesterday's answers. And I think, unlike previous popes, who became global when they assumed the papacy for the first time in modern era, we have a pope who is global before becoming the pope. This guy, Pope Leo, as the prior general of the Augustinian for 12 years in Rome, he visited the five continents of the world. So he knows how the world works. And he studied at CTU, a Catholic university that is reputable for producing and advancing intercultural theology, intercultural ministry, outreach to the poor and to migrants. So he was schooled in this kind of training, and then he was exposed to liberation theology in Peru and experienced how the world works. So I think that Pope Leo will indeed be a pope, not only of the Catholic Church, but a pope of the world.
And you mentioned CTU, that's the Catholic Theological Union in Chicago. So just another local connection here. Dr. Michael Murphy, can you speak to his first remarks? I counted 11 uses of the word peace in the translation I read. What are your takeaways?
Yeah, opened up with peace be with you and be at peace. We are living in a very tumultuous time. And I think that, you know, it's almost like the field hospital of Pope Francis, where you diagnose where the bleeding is. And the bleeding is this kind of fractured feeling we have, you know, maybe person to person, family to family even, but, you know, nation to nation. These are very strange days. And so the church can be a, again, it can be the Pontifex Maximus that could help really, you know, help us find each other again. And I would say, just to Father Elu's insight as well, that, you know, Vatican II is a very important marker for someone like Cardinal Leo XIV. And, you know, the metaphor we have in the church is always like, let's open up the windows and let the world into the church. Pope Francis and someone like Cardinal Leo XIV is going to say, yeah, we opened the windows up to the church to let Jesus out, you know, to let Jesus out as far as the peripheries, to the poor, to the margins, to the whole world, as Father Elu was describing his Augustinian kind of missionary vocation as well. So I'm glad to see Father Paul sit back down. Maybe he wants to speak to the Augustinian vocation of mission work, or whatever you want to go, Brian, but like, that's my insight there.
No, that's a great point, and I'm glad. And Father Paul Galletto is back with us. He's a pastor at St. Paul Parish in South Philadelphia, an administrator at St. Augustine Church. He was a classmate of Pope Leo at Villanova University, and he's also an Augustinian. And, you know, a lot of us became more familiar, if we weren't already, in the last decade with the how the Jesuits approach their faith and the world. And I think more people are learning now about what it means to be Augustinian. So, Father Paul, can you speak to that aspect of this, please?
Sure. You know what? Coincidentally, or fortuitously, Bob or Pope Leo was elected on May 8th, which was the anniversary of the burning of St. Augustine Church in 1844. Well, take a step back. The Augustinians arrived in the United States in 1796 to help the Irish immigrants, and the Irish were the lowest of the low. And Philadelphia was the only place in the British Empire at that time where the Catholic Mass was celebrated. So a lot of Irish immigrants came to the city of brotherly love. And from the cares and donations of the Irish, we built St. Augustine Church in 1798. And it's the only Catholic institution that George Washington gave money to. He gave $50, which was a lot of money back then, for the construction of the church. He died the following year. And the Augustinians built a school there. They had a massive library. The church became the founding place of the Philadelphia Orchestra. The Augustinians were very involved in the arts, but there was a great resentment towards immigrants, and the Know Nothing Party resented the Irish. And there was a piece of legislation that said the only Bible that could be used was the King James Version. And the Irish Catholics resented that. And the local non-Catholic ministry riled up the people. At least I'm just reading the history upstairs, a book that was written 100 years ago, actually. And on the May 8th, they burned down St. Augustine Church, the library, the friary where the Augustinians lived. And the Augustinians have always tried to be attentive to the immigrants. And that's why I think this was a sign that Pope Leo is going to take care of peoples, the movement of peoples, and that it's a human right to migrate. It started with Jesus, Mary, and Joseph when they fled Herod and moved to Egypt. And it's been going ever since in the Christian world. And, you know, immigrants need to follow the laws of the nation they're moving to, but they have a right to do that. And I think Pope Leo will be a great advocate of that, as the Augustinians have been since, you know, certainly since 1796 when we came here to the United States.
Sister Kathleen, we've talked a lot on this program about in recent weeks about the plight of immigrants and how much fear there is right now in America in particular. Can you speak about that in your work and you know, whether this selection of Pope Leo offers any hope or is more conflict ahead potentially?
It does. Pope Leo offers us great hope. There is great fear here. We went from the women at this shelter where I live and work being afraid to go out, even to school or work or anywhere, afraid to leave the house, to settling into a kind of careful routine. But The fear is underlying everything. And I know that is purposely being instilled by our government. The hope that Pope Leo brings, and the same hope that Pope Francis brought, is that promise that immigrants are, one, in their full rights of leaving, fleeing a country that they could no longer live in, and are here. Yes, they have to arrange legally to stay here, but they are here on a human basis with every moral right to be here. I believe that Pope Leo understands that deeply because of his own background, and partly because we have seen, I was also a missionary in Peru for about 13 years before this, and the people there in Peru saw a side of Pope Leo, then Bishop of Chulucanas. They called him the bishop who arrives on a bicycle or in a moto taxi. He was one of the people. He was one of those who recognize the humanity of people and the simplest of people. And that's what gives me great hope as he becomes Pope now, that he will continue that deep concern and love for those who are sometimes forgotten, sometimes overlooked, and sometimes treated with disdain that doesn't recognize their human dignity.
Let's go to the phones now at 800-222-9455. Chris is calling from Urbana. Chris, thank you for calling in this morning.
Hi, good morning. Apologize for any background noise. I'm sitting in my car. I, too, grew up Catholic in Chicago during the baby boom. And for those that did that, we understand, it was a really significant time, I think, because that's when there were so many Catholic churches and schools in Chicago. So his background resonates with me and many others. I, too, went to St. Mary's, but I went to St. Mary of the Lake and then to St. Ignatius, so I understand a lot of the conversation.
Yeah, Queen of Apostles for me and Marian Catholic High School. So I'm with you, maybe a little younger, but yes.
So not to belabor it, but I worked for 28 years in the federal government. So a lot of what I've been seeing is extremely distressful. My comment is, I think this is a brilliant political move on the part of the Vatican. I think it speaks volumes to volumes of truth to power, shall we say. And I hope that the message gets across to the Catholics in the United States. It's not who Jesus was as much as it was what Jesus said. And Pope Francis understood that, and it appears Pope Leo, too, understands that. I think he's a wonderful successor to Pope Francis. And again, a very insightful selection by the Cardinals of the Vatican.
Thank you so much for the call, Chris. I really appreciate it. That does echo what we heard from somebody who sent a text in earlier, Aaron, who said, basically, I'll paraphrase here, that America is very divided right now. And maybe this is a hope for some ability to bring people together here in America with this selection. We will continue this conversation after a short break. We are talking about Pope Leo XIV. Formerly Robert Bob Francis Prevost from Dalton, Illinois, 800-222-9455. If you want to join us today, we're speaking with Father Paul Galletto, who knew him, was a classmate at Villanova, Augustinian University. Father Stan Chu Ilo, professor at DePaul, Dr. Michael Murphy at Loyola University in Chicago, Sister Kathleen Mulcahy, who works with immigrants, part of the Dominican Sisters of Springfield. She's based in Chicago. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about Pope Leo from Illinois, from Dalton, Illinois, south suburbs of Chicago, but also a man of the world. He spent much of his adult life in Peru. And my guests for this conversation are Father Paul Galletto, pastor at St. Paul Parish in South Philadelphia. He was a classmate of Pope Leo, formerly Bob Prevost at Villanova University. Father Stan Chu Ilo, who is a professor of Catholic Studies at DePaul, Dr. Michael Murphy, director of the Hank Center for Catholic Intellectual Heritage and a lecturer at Loyola University Chicago, Sister Catherine Mulcahy with the Dominican Sisters of Springfield, who works with immigrants in Chicago. And I want to add one more voice to our show today, Father Tom McCarthy, who is director of community relations at St. Rita High School and the Shrine Chapel director there. He is also an Augustinian priest. Father Tom, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What was your reaction to Cardinal Prevost becoming Pope Leo?
I was absolutely shocked. I like what Father Paul said. Oh my, OMG! I loved it. I was in our student center with 72. Fifth graders who were having a tour of our shrine and some of our St. Rita students, and it was loud, and I thought I heard what I heard, but then I said, I don't know if I heard it, and it was just unbelievable. And then the students just erupted. They just erupted. It was actually a very beautiful thing.
I understand you worked with him before. Can you tell us about that?
Well, he was our provincial here in Chicago, and so I'm very grateful that he named me the president of St. Rita at the young age of 35. Never did we have someone that age. And I just will always remember that he trusted me. And he empowered me to say I could do this. And I ended up being there 15 years doing that job. And I will be forever grateful for him in seeing in me that I could do this.
What does it mean? This is now the second pontiff in a row who has been what you would call an order priest, if I have that right, as opposed to a diocesan.
A religious.
Thank you. What does that mean to you? What is the significance of that?
Well, I think it's a beautiful thing. I mean, I don't. My guess is I certainly wasn't in the conclave, but you know, he wasn't elected because he was a religious and Augustinian. But I think because of the way he lives out who he is as an Augustinian and his ministry as an Augustinian, people saw that. And as many of the you know, the people have been saying on the show, you know, about his experience, and you know, he is who he is, and he truly is the son of Augustine, and the way he lives and the way he builds up community, the way he brings people together, which is the core of who we are as Augustinians. And I think as an Augustinian, he brings that rich tradition. And as our general, he visited over 50 countries. You know, and just unbelievable in his time in Peru. I was with him in Peru visiting in Chiclayo, and, you know, the people just loved him because he was so real. He was just one of them. He didn't have airs. He wasn't pompous. He was just who he was, as we know him as Augustinians, our brother Bob.
Interesting. Dr. Murphy, I wonder if you have a perspective on that, given your reference earlier to some of these sort of what would you say, armchair politicking, or not politicking, but sort of like prognosticating that a lot of Catholic scholars do when the conclave happens?
No, I think Father McCarthy has it right. You know, these, and even your last caller about, it's a whole span of being competent, you know? So on the one, you know, visiting 50 countries, leading the Augustinians, a seminary professor, Vatican appointments, this is an able leader. A BA in math from Villanova, you know, this guy knows his numbers. The Vatican needs to really drill down on some financial reform there, and he's probably the guy to do it. But then his just his gifts, and you know, so he's a competent administrator. Is there a political element? I don't know if the Cardinals went that far. I'll just add, I thought, you know, that he would be a deft bridge builder to really calmly situate where the church can be a moral force and a force for good. You know, and as surprising as it was to have an American, I remember Cardinal George said this. He said, you won't have an American Pope or a U.S. Pope until the country is in decline politically. And that interests me. I don't know if we are, but we're in definitely kind of, you know, convulsive times.
Yeah, decline is a strong word, but we're certainly in trouble. Although I suppose that people might agree on both sides of the political spectrum we're in decline.
I'm sure they do.
Disagree about why, but yeah, that's a conversation maybe for another day.
Agreed.
Yeah. Father Stan Chu-Ilo, professor at DePaul, let me bring you back into the conversation. One of the things you have studied, we've talked a lot about lapsed Catholics, or we've mentioned that today as a significant group of Catholics. And one of the reasons you hear people say that is the abuse scandal in the church. I know you've made this an area of your scholarship. There are some people saying the Survivors Network of those abused by priests. I saw quoted in a newspaper yesterday saying that they were disappointed in the selection of Cardinal Prevost because of that. Can you speak to that aspect of his past work?
First of all, is as a Catholic priest, my heart goes out to any of your listeners who has been impacted in any way, shape, or form by clerical sexual abuse, or who is hurting as a result of what any of us clergymen or pastoral agents or as an institution has done. There is no excuse for that. If we have to preach the good news of our Lord Jesus Christ, we must be good news to the people. It's not good news when the person you trust violates that trust. I serve on the Presidential Commission of the Catholic Theological Society of America on this very issue. I also prepared, one of the people that prepared for the visit of Pope Francis to Africa in 2023. I studied the dossier. It's not simply something happening in North America. It's also happening in Africa. It's happening in Latin America. It's like a wild, as we say in Africa, a wild Harmattan fire spreading. But we must also admit that Pope Francis, and it was started by John Paul II, continued by Pope Benedict, there has been effort to refine the process of reporting. There have been efforts to hold bishops accountable. Pope Francis, for instance, the whole of the Bishop of Chile, he accepted their resignation, but it is not enough. I served as the North American Regional Coordinator for the Holy See's mission of doing theology from the existential periphery. So I traveled to El Paso. I traveled to Ciudad Juarez, to the border. I met with victims of abuse in the church. Someone said that she will never come back to the church because it's like going back into an abusive marriage. So we must denounce this. And I think it's not just a problem that is left for the Pope, or so the Pope will just wave a magic wand and the problem gets solved. Every Catholic must take responsibility. Parents, parishioners, we cannot allow the beautiful project that we see as the gospel to be turned into a source of a wound, to become a wounding church rather than a healing church. So I think that Pope Leo must make it a primary objective of his papacy to stamp this shame from the consciousness and consciousness of our church. I think time has come to put an end to this stench that I think totally undermines everything we stand for as a church. And I speak strongly on this matter because I see the victims every day. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. I appreciate it. We heard from a different Aaron in Springfield by text message who said he attended Catholic school for many years. He's not practicing now, but he was raised Catholic, considers himself culturally Catholic. And he said, I'm concerned about the stories of abuse that happened under his watch in the U.S. and Peru. He also adds, though, unfortunately, it's nearly impossible to find a leader in the church for whom this is not a concern. Father Paul, I wonder if you can speak to what, I mean, you have known Bob Prevost, Pope Leo, for a long time. If you can speak to where he is on this issue.
Yeah, what I really want to do is address a little bit of what Father Tom was talking about. You know, here at St. Paul Parish in South Philadelphia, when the Augustinians arrived here 3 years ago, you know, on a Sunday, we were at most getting like 250 people. We're now up over to 600 people. Tom came here, did a parish mission. The people are so open to the message that the Augustinians are bringing here. The average age of our parish is around 35. This Easter, so 2 Easters ago when I got here, we were around 450. Then we were 700 last year. This year, we were 933 attending Mass. So there's something happening in the church that's very positive. And I think it's the message that we Augustinians bring about community. And I think that that's what the great gift that Pope Leo, Bob, is going to bring to the church. He believes, as head of the order, he knew the importance of community, of caring for one another. You know, the three monikers of the Augustinian order are truth, unity, and love. And we sort of preach that almost ad nauseam, but it works. It's what is important, you know, and there are, as we just heard, there are people who are hurting, and our great message is heal, forgive, mercy. And I think Pope Francis, his ministry was great for that. And I think Pope Leo is going to continue that. Maybe Tom wants to jump in, but we just were so blessed to have him. And we had, it's great, the experience here at the church in Philadelphia.
We are running pretty short on time, but Father Tom, if you have something briefly you want to add to that, sure.
I'd say that we know who Bob Prevost is, and we are very proud of him, and he is an unbelievable minister in the church. We are waiting for the world to see who this good man is and what he will do and be a bridge builder to build community and to truly proclaim who Jesus is to the world.
Well, last question I want to put, I think, to, and maybe we can end on a little bit lighter note. Michael Murphy, I think I'll come back to you for this maybe. Chicago, Illinois lost its mind with the memes. Everybody is digging up every connection. There's a woman my mom worked with in a suburban school district in Chicago who realized that Bob Prevost was at her wedding decades ago. You know, the Aurelio's Pizza in Homewood, where I used to hang out in high school, is where he had lunch. It's pretty surreal. It turns out I grew up less than a mile from him. It was 3 blocks north and 6 blocks over. I was in the town of Riverdale. Just talk about the sort of the memification in about a minute, if you will, of the Pope here in America and Illinois in particular.
I'll be quick. I love the question, Brian. So my friend Jerome is from South Holland. He was Googling and it said that that Robert Prevost was from South Holland, AI. I'm like, hey, man, that's not, it shows you where AI is weak. But we found out, artificial ignorance. So we had, it's just amazing. All these memes you see, Mike Ditka in a papal, like the Bears, everything about being wrapped in a Chicago hot dog, holding a piece of deep dish pizza. It's too much. It's just great. I wonder what his friends think about it. But the one thing I will say as a bridge builder, right, even in his family, his mom's a Cubs fan from the North side. His dad's a Cardinals fan. What does Pope Leo XIV do? He becomes a Sox fan. So building bridges from the house out.
The one
you might be
one.
Able to do an exorcism for the Sox.
They need one. They need one, Father.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Amen to that. Father Paul Galletto, Father Stanchu Ilo at DePaul, Michael Murphy from Loyola, Sister Catherine Mulcahy from the Dominican Sisters of Springfield, and Father Tom McCarthy from St. Rita High School. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show. Very much appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is it for us today. The 21st Show is produced by, and I should say that's it for us this week. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Coulson Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Special thank you to everyone who sent text messages and called in. If you want to let us know what you think about this program, you can always email us. talk@21stshow.org is our address. You can find that at our website, where you can also find links to subscribe to our podcast. Maybe you want to share this show with someone you know, maybe from the South Suburbs. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.